Blog Talk Radio.
Cannot play with them. Cannot win with them. Cannot coach with them. Can't do it. I want winners.
The new record, Michael Strahan. 22 and a half sacks. Breaks the bar held by Mark Gatto.
Just put your name on it. That's all I say. Be a man or woman. Put your name on it.
Santonio with a touchdown. Santonio. I don't know how he did it.
I'm raising the ante. Anybody wants in, get in. Anybody wants out, get out.
Devin Hester, you are ridiculous.
That's got to be one of those top 10 plays on SportsCenter YouTube.
Emmitt Smith has eclipsed Walter Payton as the NFL's all-time rushing leader. And somewhere, sweetness is smiling.
One touchdown, we are world champions. Believe it, and it will happen.
Touchdown, Giants, with 35 seconds to go, Andy DeBurris. And the Giants, with the most improbable win, have won Super Bowl 42.
Control yourself. Just tell them to stay calm. Let's keep our composure.
A lot of time, patience.
Good Skinner stuff. You're never too old for Skinner.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Boston Sports Beat. My name is Jesse McHilchian. I am your host, welcome to our newly named radio show. I know you're used to me calling it H4TV News. It's a nice name, but a bit bland was my feeling on it. So now we get a brand spanking new name, the Boston Sports Beat. So now you know we're all about the Boston sports. And another new change we got going on right now. I know you guys are used to me doing this with my fellow colleague, Xander Manning. He's just had his wisdom teeth out this weekend, so unfortunately he couldn't come on. We all miss him very much, but we've got a newcomer on this week, and that's Liam Bevins. Liam, thanks for joining us.
Jesse, it's great to be here, man. Hopefully I can provide as much wisdom as you can.
Ah, I'm sure you'll do great, man. We're all excited to have you here. So let's get started. We're going to start off talking about the New England Patriots. NFL free agency just in full swing right now, and everybody is moving left and right from team to team. It's just making my head spin trying to follow all this craziness. And the Pats are no exception. We're seeing all kinds of players coming and going. Of course, the biggest headline was the departure of Darrell Revis. He is heading back to the Jets, everybody, signing, I think it was the biggest contract for a cornerback in the history of the game, 5 years, $70 million, an average of about $14 million a year. So huge contract for Revis. And amongst the other big names leaving the Pats this year, Brandon Browner, Shane Vereen, Akeem Ayers, and Jonathan Casillas have all departed for other teams. Browner heading to the Saints, Vereen and Casillas heading to the Giants, and Ayers heading to the Rams. So, Liam, my first question to you is, with all these guys, who are such a big part of this Super Bowl winning team, with all these guys leaving, did the Pats make the right call not picking these guys up? What are your thoughts?
Well, you know what? There's no doubt the Patriots got worse this week. There's no question about it. Darrell Revis getting $70 million over 5 years, though, for a 29-year-old quarterback, when 30 seems to be the magic age here for free agents in the NFL, where their play really just kind of drops off, I think the Jets might have really just kind of outpaid it. You know, I think they kind of jumped the gun here and spent too much money. Once Revis was gone, you knew Browner was going, because the man can only play bump and run coverage. He can only play man on the outside. And so if you were losing Revis and you're losing your top lockdown corner, now you're going to have to go to more of a zone scheme. Brandon Browner can't fit in on that. So they really had no choice on those two guys. I mean, obviously your secondary just took a major, major hit, but they decided to spend the money early and bring Devin McCourty back. So it's looking like now they're going to have to look into the draft and look into some possible trades later to fix the secondary.
Yeah, absolutely. A tough loss, but I got to tell you, you know, like you said, it was a big, perhaps an overspending by the Jets on Revis. You know, he is without a doubt one of the best, if not the best corner in the game right now. But like you said, he's getting on in years. It's a ton of money. And the fact is, the Patriots probably weren't going to get him. I mean, even without the money factoring in, I mean, Yes, Revis won the Super Bowl with the Patriots, but he made his name as a Jet. You know, there is a certain loyalty factor that he had with the New York Jets.
I think Revis only is loyal to the dollar. I wouldn't say he has any loyalty factor with the team, Jesse. I got to disagree with you there.
I don't know. I think there's a certain factor of wanting to come back to the Jets. I think there was a certain. I don't think it played as much a factor as the money.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that was the biggest factor. But what I'm saying is, the Patriots, if they were going to get him back, they had to outbid the Jets, because if it was a tie, he was going to go to the Jets.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if they both offered the same amount.
I've seen some people saying that they really, even if they gave him a ton of money, the only option to bring him back was for the Patriots to pick up that one extra year on the contract. That was the only way he was going to return. That they couldn't even get a long-term deal with him, that his people weren't even looking for it.
Yeah, absolutely. It just seems like sort of a lost cause. So certainly tough for the Patriots secondary, but, you know, it's not all losses in this free agency. There have been a few new pickups. They got linebacker and defensive end Jabal Sheard. They got wide receiver
Brandon
Gibson. That
was a huge pickup.
Yes. And then they also got tight end Scott Chandler from the Bills. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a few free agency signings. Maybe nobody as big a name as Darrelle Revis, but still quite a few names. So, Leah, my question to you is, who do you think will have the biggest impact on this coming season out of some of those names?
Sheard is going to have the biggest impact, and it won't be the numbers. It will be because he is going to spell Rob Ninkovich and Chandler Jones. Ninkovich spent 93.8% of the snaps on the field last year. That's an astounding number for an aging player. Sheard's going to be able to get in there. He's going to be able to set the edge of the five technique. He's going to be able to hold the line and stop the run, something Chandler Jones really struggled with. And so he's just going to add some depth to a D-line that, now that you've lost the secondary, you need to get a pass rush. And so you need fresh guys rotating in and out to get that. And so Sheard's really going to be able to offer that for this team.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in terms of passing yards allowed, this team ranked about middle of the pack last year. And I think that sort of undersells just how amazing the secondary was last year, because the fact is they did not have a pass rush. And particularly they did not have depth. I mean, particularly, like you said, they did not have depth. Ninkovich had to play every snap. Chandler Jones was gone for a chunk of the season. I mean, it's tough personally, I think one of the tough losses they've had in free agency is the loss of Akeem Ayers. He provided some real depth at the pass rush. But I think this pickup of Jabal Sheard is certainly a step in the right direction. I've been saying for a while, the Patriots for years have really needed to pick up guys on the pass rush, and hopefully this pickup is a step in the right direction.
I'll say this, though. I'm a little hesitant to be excited about him just because I'm jaded over Roosevelt Colvin, and that's the last time they really brought in a top-flight outside linebacker, DN-type player to bring a pass rush. So they did strike out the last time they did this. But bringing in Akeem Ayers last year was good, and if Sheard can bring any production like Ayers had with the 4 sacks in 9 games, then that's going to be a huge, huge help to this defense.
Absolutely. All right, so now, obviously, you know, the offseason is still going. We're still seeing rumors back and forth. But the one I want to focus on right now is Vince Wilfork. Now, everybody knows the Patriots chose not to pick up his option, and he wrote that heartfelt letter to the fans, making it sound like he was really going. But the fact is, nobody has signed him yet. So there's still, I'm not saying that he will return to the Pats. All I'm saying is there's a chance. He's not gone yet. He is talking with other teams. We've heard rumors about him talking with other teams. So my question to you as we wrap up this first segment is, does Wilfork return to the Patriots? And if not, who gets him?
I got to say, right now, if you look at that D-tackle market, pot roast, Terrence Knighton from the Denver Broncos only got a 1-year, $4 million deal with the Redskins. He's only 28 years old. There is no chance people are going to pay Vince Wilfork right now. And so his best option is going to be to return to the Patriots. And he's going to have to take a huge pay cut, or he's going to have to retire from football. That's what it's looking like, because people just aren't – once Ndamukong Suh got his giant contract, and once Haloti Ngata got sent up to Detroit, that was it. People aren't interested in the DTs that are left out there.
I don't know. I mean, I'm hearing a lot of rumors about people being willing to pay a guy like Vince Wilfork, and he can be a real anchor on your defense. I think you may be underselling him. And also, after the Patriots didn't pick up his option, I don't know how Wilfork's feeling about his return to the Patriots. I think you may be underestimating just how hurt he was by that. But who knows? They may surprise me.
He seemed really hurt last year too, though.
That's true. That is also very true. But that's going to do it for our Patriots segment. But when we come back, we're going to have plenty more to talk about. We'll be able to talk some Celtics, some Red Sox. You know, there's plenty going on with those teams as well. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Now I'm here. Welcome back to the Boston Sports Beat. I am still your host, Jesse Mayfield Sheehan. I am still joined by our newest on-air analyst, Liam Bevins, who has been doing a pretty good job so far, handled that Patriots segment pretty well. But now we're going to move on to the Boston Celtics in the NBA. And the Celtics have been, surprising. They've been overall very pleasantly surprising. Still in the fight, very close for that coveted eighth spot in the Eastern Conference playoffs, but suffered a bit of a setback on this Monday night when Isaiah Thomas, who has just been such a spark for this team, took a hard fall, suffered a back injury. You know, they're saying it may not be that bad, but he's still not back yet. So, Liam, my question to you is, how much does this injury to Isaiah Thomas hurt the team as they try to fight for that last spot in the playoffs?
You know, since the trade deadline, he's brought such an energy back to this franchise. The fans in the Garden are finally, feeling the electricity from this team. They're really getting behind them. They're rooting for this group of underdogs. And that's the biggest thing he brings. He brings this fast-paced offense to the team. He's instant offense. And without him in the lineup, it's going to be very difficult for them to continue to win. You're not going to have Evan Turner doing what he did last night on a consistent basis. I mean, he dropped 30 points on the Magic. Evan Turner is not going to be the answer for this team if they're going to be able to make a push and make it into the eighth seed. They seem to just be stuck on this hump where they can't get over a game and a half or two-game lead that they're behind.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with you. Evan Turner, he's been pretty good. He's also been a bit of a surprise this year to a lesser degree in that he's mm-hmm. been pretty effective as a distributor. But like you say, he puts up 30 points one night, and then it takes him a few games just to get up to double digits, a mini version of Jeff Green again. And we all know how well that experiment turned out for the Celtics.
Oh, Jeff Green with so much less potential.
Yeah, it was certainly tough with that one. But not some good feelings left over as he had his, first game, back in Boston with the Grizzlies, on, I think it was Wednesday, and it was a pretty warm reception from the Celtics fans. So it's good, still good relations,
Yeah,
but
it is.
Back to the Thomas injury, I agree with you completely. It's got to hurt so much. Thomas just brings something the Celtics really lacked, which is such a reliable top scorer and a reliable effective distributor. Like you said, he just brings instant offense. And not having that for however long, they're not going to have that. It really hurts them. But,
it is. And you know what? Who stepped up big time in the game against Orlando? Not just Evan Turner, but Brad Stevens himself, the coach. The mild-mannered coach came into the locker room and cursed up a storm on this team and really inspired them for the second half. That's not something that we've seen out of Coach Stevens yet since he's been here.
Absolutely. I mean, I have a fair amount of admiration for Coach Stevens, just the way he's coached this team these past 2 years, and the fact that it's hard to coach a team in a rebuilding phase. And I think he's done pretty well in bringing out some untapped potential in some of these players. Granted, you know, we can talk about the failed experiments with guys like Jeff Green and Rajon Rondo and stuff like that, but then we can talk about some successes with guys like Jared Sullinger or Avery Bradley or, you know, Marcus Smart this year. You know, guys who have really just sort of, you know, blossomed on this team under Brad Stevens' tutelage. And you can talk about the fact that, you know, ordinarily he is mild-mannered, but this time he really showed up and showed, hey, you know, I'm not just going to let everything slide, which I think is effective. To more of the immediate talk. Now, the Celtics are taking on the Indiana Pacers tonight at 7 p.m. So be sure to tune in for that, Celtics fans, because, you know, the Indiana Pacers, who just seemed untouchable last season, have been having a tough season of their own this year, just clinging on to the seventh spot in the Eastern Conference. Seriously, what happened to the Eastern Conference? I have no idea.
It's like brutal at this point.
It really is. The Pacers and Heat are now fighting for the bottom of the barrel, are now fighting for the bottom spots in the playoffs with losing records. It boggles the mind how what a difference a year makes, absolutely. But going back to tonight's game, what's going to be the key for the Celtics in tonight's game?
Well, the Celtics lucked out a little bit because tonight was supposed to be the night that Paul George returned from his broken leg. So they're not going to have to face the return of a perennial all-star. The key for Indiana is their defense. They've been the best in the East defensively this year. It didn't really matter that they lost Lance Stevens. They've only been giving up 96 points a game. And Roy Hibbert in his two contests against the Celtics, just because they don't really have that typical five-man for the Celtics that can cover him, he's dominated. He's put in average 20 and 10 in the two contests. So the biggest thing for them is going to be keeping Roy Hibbert off the block and just being able to find just enough offense from the guys that they have without Isaiah Thomas. I think somebody like Avery Bradley is really going to have to step up and going to have to put in a 25, 26-point night tonight for them to get over the hump. But this is just a huge game for them. The Pacers are the 7th seed. They're only two games ahead of the Celtics. They're divided by three seeds, but they're only divided by two games right now. This is a really big one with huge playoff implications.
Yep. Absolutely. You mentioned Avery Bradley. You know, he's another guy who's been so surprising this half of the season. He's really starting to look like, you know, the veteran leader that you would hope he would be, you know, not just on the defensive side, but also on the offense, you know, developing more of a deep shot, you know, which I think, you know, it speaks to the promise, you know, after he signed that long-term contract in the offseason, you know, everybody was saying, is he really worth it? You know, he's a great defensive player, but can he score? And yeah, I tell you, if he keeps playing the way he's been playing lately, you know, who knows? And certainly
he's shown some serious promise, absolutely.
Tonight.
Yeah, he's shown some serious promise. And I think the biggest thing when they signed that contract was, if you remember when Ray Allen went out with an injury a couple years ago, Avery Bradley stepped in and he averaged over 20 a game when he was getting 5 a game before that. I think that really instilled a ton of confidence in this franchise behind Avery Bradley.
Absolutely. And he'll certainly be tested tonight as he faces, as you said, one of the best defenses in basketball in the Indiana Pacers. So be sure to tune in, Celtics fans, tonight at 7 to see the Celtics take on the Pacers. But we're going to move on to baseball right now, another sport that's in the offseason, but not without its fair share of excitement. The Boston Red Sox, they've got their new young prospect, Yoan Moncada, fresh out of Cuba. And it's been announced that he will start with the Greenville Drive in single A, and he'll be playing second base. Now, you know, we know he's an infielder. We know he specializes in playing in the infield. But having him play second base seems like a bit of a surprise to me, given that they've locked up Dustin Pedroia to play for basically ever. So, Liam, does this make any sense to you that he's playing second?
So, once I heard this, I had to go back through some scouting reports and check out what's going on with this kid. And although they talked about his great size, they raved that, you know, he was a legit 6'1", 210. He looks like Yasiel Puig out there. He's a switch-hitting infielder. They watched him take ground balls at short, and they said he was uncomfortable and there was no way he would be an MLB shortstop. And so right off the bat there, you've already limited him now to basically two positions because he's not a first baseman. So he's either going to be second base or third, or possibly because of his speed, you could send him out to center field and let it ride out there. I don't really understand why they put him at second base. Pedroia is under contract until 2021. He's the heart and soul, other than David Ortiz, Pedroia is the heart and soul of your franchise. You know, he's a little Mighty Mouse out there running around. The fans love him. He works his butt off for this team. I guess they just decided he looks a little better at second. Pablo Sandoval is under contract until 2019 with a club option for 2020. So either way, it looks like we're a long way away from seeing Machado actually make it to the major leagues.
Yeah, it certainly is tough. And I mean, I've expressed my opinion pretty strongly of how I felt about the Moncada deal, spending $63 million on this guy who might turn out to be a star and might not. But again, just hearing these flaws and hearing he doesn't fit at the position that the Red Sox really have such a question mark at present moment, while they've already filled second and third base for a while, it seems. It's just, you know, so many question marks. I mean, maybe the Red Sox front office knows something we don't, but this, it just baffles my mind right now, Liam. I just don't know what to think of this at all.
Yeah, it really doesn't make much sense. And you know what? It's not like there's just wide open room in the outfield for him to move into either. We both know the Red Sox don't have any room out there right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of that outfield, we're going to move on to our next question on the Red Sox. And like you said, just an absolute cluster, you know, shenanigans out there in the outfield. With so many talented players, so many potential. Yes, I said shenanigans, it's a funny word. But it's such a difficult thing to manage just because you've got so many potentially talented players out in that outfield. And there's a bit of a situation with Rusney Castillo suffering a strained oblique injury. And he's been out for a little bit. So, I mean, how does that sort of impact this situation in the outfield, Liam?
You know, losing Rusney for this beginning of spring training might have actually added some clarification to what John Farrell's going to have to do. It looks like with how hot Mookie Betts has started here in center, and with Rusney really being his main competition, it looks like Mookie Betts is the clear-cut runner, front runner here to start in center field for the Red Sox on opening day. As we've seen, Jackie Bradley Jr. can prove he cannot hit a baseball, so he's not really an option out there.
Another case of a promising prospect that just didn't turn out.
Oh my God, there was so much hope for him. There really was, and he is just not panned out at all. And then you look over.
This is why you don't pay $63 million for prospects. I'm just saying.
And then you look over in left field. And they threw a ton of money at former shortstop Hanley Ramirez and decided, okay, you're a left fielder now. Go figure out the green monster. So there's no way he's not going to start out there. And then in right field, Shane Victorino claimed victory before spring training even began, all on his own, saying, I've earned it. I'm the right fielder. That's it. It looks like he might actually be right. His main competition is Alan Craig and Brock Holt. Alan Craig, a couple of years off being a 300 hitter, but you just have no idea what you're going to get from him. And Brock Holt seems to just be the man without a position. He maybe a lot like Yoan Mancada. We don't know where Brock Holt's going to be here. He is listed as number two. If you go on the Red Sox depth chart, he's number two everywhere.
The only difference is Brock Holt has shown that he can play everywhere as opposed to Mancada, who can't play shortstop.
You're
it makes me
right.
feel so bad for Brock Holt because he was one of the best players on the Red Sox last year. He played spectacular everywhere you put him, and now
he might have been the best.
Yeah, but the problem is he's not good enough to start at any one position. He can be a backup at any position. He's probably the best utility man of all time. But there's only so much glory you get as being the best utility man of all time, and it's really so sad.
Right.
It's such underused talent, which, again, is the problem of this logjam in the outfield.
But luckily, with a guy like Brock Holt, unlike Xander Bogaerts, where you change his position, you're not going to screw him up mentally. He's just shown that he can go wherever the manager puts him, and he's going to be fine. So
exactly.
You know, Brock Holt seems to have found his niche in the major league, and then eventually they're going to have to find a spot for him because somebody else will.
Absolutely. So I just want to get your prediction right now. Who do you see as the outfielders on opening day for the Red Sox?
Opening day, I have Mookie Betts in center and probably batting leadoff. I've got in left field Hanley Ramirez, and in right field, as long as he stays healthy, which I think is a huge question mark. Other people aren't questioning that much, but I think it's a huge question mark. Shane Victorino gets to start and right, just based on past performance.
Yeah. I mean, it seems pretty clear-cut with left and right, as you said. The question mark really is center field, which reminds me so much of what happened last year. I mean, you remember last year it was how am I blanking on who it was that just – absolutely pulled away, and he just seemed like the guy. I can't believe I'm blanking on his name. I'm going to kick myself once I hear the name. He went back to Philly, and he just looked like the guy for the center field position.
You know what?
At
this point, 2014 was such a disaster. I put it all in the memory bank, and it's all gone.
That is fair, but. You know, he looked like the guy. He played so well. And now his season wound up being such a disaster, and he left the Red Sox so quickly that now I can't even remember his name, which, again, is a bit tragic. You know, I'm going to kick myself later when I remember it. But, you know, for now, it just shows that spring training can only prove so much. So
Right.
Your
guys
ball,
get
your
hot all the time. It's
back.
Only a small sample size.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, you know, I think you're pretty bold picking Mookie Betts, but, you know, he has shown his skills. He's gotten more playing time at the major league level than Castillo has. Castillo, a bit of a question mark given the limited amount of playing time he's had, but
he's only been, what, 10 games in the major leagues?
Something like that. He has not had a lot of time, so it certainly is a question. You know, it's a question that needs to be asked, you know, that needs to be seen, and not having him in spring training certainly hurts his status.
Right. Could you see any scenario where Jackie Bradley Jr. is the starting center fielder, other than injuries to Mookie Betts as well?
Well, if somehow miraculously he learns how to hit a baseball, or like if he gets a bat that just sort of like magnetizes to the baseball or something like that. I mean, I'm trying to figure it, and I don't see it. I look at some of those swings that he was taking last year, and they were so ugly. I mean, it was
terrible.
It was
like he closed his
awful
eyes.
Awful to watch.
It's like he closed his eyes.
And then it was like he forgot how to baseball. It was like once he got up to the plate, he forgot how to baseball. And then the disaster with the coaches, which may or may not have been a thing. It was a bit, but just the distraction that came with that was just terrible, and just may have just absolutely ruined his potential. But the fact is, he's a fantastic fielder, but in my mind, fielding can only do so much for a team.
Right.
So when you're a position player, you have to be a good hitter, in my mind. But we got to wrap this one up, so thanks, everyone, for watching. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Boston Sports Beat. For our newcomer, Liam Bevins, who did such a great job. Liam, thank you so much for coming on. I am your host, Jesse Mayfield Sheehan. Be sure to follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at JGMS88. You can follow Liam at L_Bevins. That's L_BEVANS. And be sure to check out our written works as well online at h4-entertainment.com. Once again, h4-entertainment.com. And until next time, this is Jesse Mayfield Sheehan for the Boston Sports Beat, signing off.